I'm going to ask Peter to introduce himself because of, you'll hear why.
Yes, hello everyone. My name is Peter Sherman. I'm the Executive Director of Global Scholars Canada, which is a Christian professors guild focused on equipping and serving professors who are Christian, who want to use their faith and their field to cross borders and serve in underserviced areas of the globe. I'm also adjunct faculty at Redeemer University in Hamilton, Ontario, where I teach world religions. My PhD actually is in religious diversity in North America. The facts are diversity is nothing new. Different forms of pluralism have been constitutive of human life even in biblical times, and it's not a problem to be solved for most non-academics, but something simply to be negotiated in everyday life. Yet it is true that our cultural experience and valuation of diversity has changed of late. Despite echo chambers and homogenizing influences of globalization and the internet, some speak of super diversity, or diversity within diversity and multiple diversities. In fact, Christian Smith says diversity is part of the sacred project of sociology in America. And to a large extent, he says, the university and even dominant culture today. It carries a quasi-religious character insofar as it is hallowed, this is a quote from Christian Smith, hallowed, honored, and revered beyond questioning or disrespect. The irony, says Smith, is that the sacred project's championing of emancipation, justice, inclusion, diversity, tolerance, cosmopolitanism, and open-mindedness actually leads, quote, within sociology itself and higher education more broadly, to a sectarian narrowness, exclusion, uniformity, silencing, self-censorship, lack of debate, the negative sanctioning of nonconformists, and the debilitation of rigorous thought. In short, it reproduces what it opposes. And just so you know, like, Christian Smith is not a backwater sociologist. He's at Notre Dame, and he's pretty much one of the most significant sociologists in the field. So sociology and theology are my primary disciplinary homes, and more specifically, ethnography and practical theology. And what I want to do today is share briefly from my latest research on faith deconstruction to show why a quest for diversity or difference holds emancipatory promise for those who feel trapped in a strict community bent on uniformity. The flight from such homogeneous community has ambivalent results for human flourishing. So like unity, diversity is a relative good. My co-author and I, Angela Bick, have written Blessed Are the Undone, Testimonies of the Quiet Deconstruction of Faith in Canada, to be released by New Leaf Press this September. Here we describe our interviews with 28 Canadians who we asked to describe the faith they inherited, its recent deconstruction, and what followed that deconstruction. And the book really isn't on diversity, but I'm tying diversity into the talk today because it's the theme of the conference, and it probably got my paper accepted. So, deconstruction has its philosophical origins in French philosopher Jacques Derrida, although the word is becoming mainstream and has lost much of its Derridian nuance. We coined the term undone to name the spiritual experience of our participants. And maybe you've heard of the nuns and the duns, so we thought undones. We define it as Christians whose conservative or evangelical affiliation with God, the Bible, and the Christian faith is falling apart, usually prompted by failures of the church, and that's very important, while simultaneously being emotionally and spiritually distanced from a taken-for-granted religious family, community, or tradition. And we do not see it as co-equal with deconversion, although that is a part of it. So that's the definition there. So we put this in the context of the waning of what we call the Billy Graham era of evangelicalism, and the dissipation of Christendom in the West. My co-author Angela Bick and I believe that deconstruction and its popular usage in evangelical circles today can be prophetic, iconoclastic, and while at worst leading to deconversion, and I call it a deconversion stage because I don't think it's always necessarily the end, it can be a form of spiritual development that calls people to repent, to reform, and to make reparations. We use the analogy of canoe camping for the spiritual journey and see deconstruction as the moment of breaking camp and moving on in God's call to the next camp. And here's my outline, very simple outline of the talk in the next 10 or so minutes. So diversity has its problems, but uniformity even more so. Reformed theologian Matthew Cumming, and that's my theological background, has a chapter entitled Kuyper's Deconstruction of Uniformity. And Kuyper is a turn of the century Dutch Reformed theologian and the prime minister, former prime minister of Holland. Anyways, in his book, Christian Hospitality and Muslim Immigration in an Age of Fear, he looks at these categories. Cumming and Kuyper are highly wary of modern uniformity and the quest for ideological hegemony, especially in terms of liberal democracy. Kuyper calls it, quote, the curse of modern life, and Cumming calls it, quote, a pervasive temptation afflicting every religious and secular movement on earth. Cumming says this push for uniformity is motivated by the anxiety generated by the deep, close, and fast difference of a globalized age, instigating the impulse to control and neutralize cultural and ideological difference. So diversity becomes the impulse for uniformity. Let me be clear. The undone were not nominal Christians. And I'll say that again. The undone were not nominal Christians. The common phrase we heard over and over again in the interviews was, we were all in. We were all in. What most of them experienced in the construction of their Christian faith was a tight, total, and threatened faith community, which they described as a spiritual home, generally marked by love and care of fellow members as they conformed to key Christian values with a very common sense of purpose. But these communities were also characterized by such things as, and it's a quick list here, young earth creationism, purity culture, disdain for LGBT persons, a disregard for indigenous culture, and a supportive posture towards former President Donald Trump. There was a strong value placed on uniformity in their group. Questioning things was not encouraged. It was actively discouraged, actually. So Ava, who grew up in a small Saskatchewan church, age 24, which was affiliated with a large evangelical denomination in the United States, she talks about it as a charismatic denomination that interpreted scripture literally. There was only one interpretation, and that was, quote, the right one. Quote, what was constructed in terms of my faith was a very specific black and white understanding of right and wrong. This is what your faith should look like, they said. Three other people we interviewed used the same phrase, black and white thinking, to describe the church of their origin. Quote, there was a very rigid and prescribed understanding of this is what the Bible means in your day-to-day life, and that should be everything to you, going to church every time the doors were open, reading your Bible, and praying every day, unquote. Later, Ava described her Christian upbringing as a box she inherited from her parents, containing all the tenets of faith and guidelines for how to walk that out. Quote, a set of instructions, essentially, for what a good Christian looked like, unquote. Deconstruction. What happened in the lives of the undone was that something triggered questioning the system, the totalizing system. For some, it was witnessing abuse from leaders or other failure in the church. For others, it was being exposed to other ways of thinking in the university. And others just said, it didn't work anymore for me. Anomalies built up. Cognitive dissonance became a regular feature of their life. And the dismantling of the old paradigm was both something they actively did and something, as they told us, just happened to me. When a rigid uniformity meets with difference, it either has to double down or open up. One participant who's coming undone was triggered by repeated church failure, described it as getting hit by a baseball bat. You got to remember, this is their whole life, right? I mean, just off script a second. One, he was homeschooled by his mom, and his dad was the pastor. That's a small world to be in, but it's your whole world, right? Actually, that was him who said when his faith was shattered by pastoral betrayal, and not his dad, but when he married and moved to the next church over, when his faith was shattered by pastoral betrayal and elder heavy-handedness, he described it as a bomb going off. His spiritual house was so tight and stiff and unyielding, it was prone to deconstruct violently and suddenly. Some connect deconstruction directly to decolonization, the dismantling of oppressive uniformity enforced by European hegemony. One West Coast pastor who has been undone told us, "We are now examining our embrace of power and privilege." He specifically mentioned the injury done to Canadian Indigenous people, but he added, quote, "It's how we treat minorities in this country too. You can't push it aside." More than half of our subjects said the church's treatment of sexual minorities was a reason for their deconstruction, a pivotal part of it. Quote, "The fact that most people couldn't name a church that has a thriving LGBT community should wake some of us up," said Chris, age 48. Quote, "That's not okay. Why is a whole group of people being excluded from hearing the message of Jesus Christ?" The shift from uniformity to diversity or difference is an ambivalent one, however. There is a euphoria that comes with a sense of liberation when you exit a narrow religious upbringing. But deconstruction is also a profound experience of loss. It's a shattering. One of the most pervasive images of deconstruction is actually wilderness, as evidenced by Canadian deconstructionist guide Sarah Bessie's latest book entitled Field Notes for the Wilderness. One young woman said deconstruction was like, quote, "entering a wide open space, which at times felt really exciting and freeing. It wasn't confined as the church she had grown up in. Quote, it was a space you could explore, but other times it felt scary. There was no path. I felt lonely and I didn't know where to go." On the whole, it seems the journey of deconstruction is mostly disintegrating. It is in fact shattering, and many are left only with broken pieces of the past. Some people can get stuck in what becomes a liminal space, a long, dark night of the soul. At least two people claim to feel, quote, paralyzed. Many, if not most, of our interviewees use the word trauma in some way or other, and many of them mention their reconstructing process as beginning with therapy. First, for the negative experiences that were part of their upbringing, and second, for the distress of leaving that spiritual home. So two traumas. Josiah Mahon, creator of the podcast Slow Train to Heck, which interviews deconstructing Canadians, recounts his own experience of deconstructing his homeschooled Pentecostal PK faith shattered by an awful church experience that includes his pastor's unchecked, consistent practice of plagiarizing his sermons every Sunday for 6 years. He says, quote, "Unmoored from my faith, I was in a very negative nihilism where nothing matters. There's no cosmic meaning. What is the point of anything? I felt like, why even bother living, really, when it comes down to it?" Years later, he now says he's discovering a more positive nihilism that lives on in the wisdom of the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, when Buffy apparently says, quote, "If nothing we do matters, then the only thing that matters is what we do." And he unpacks this by adding, meaning, if there is no cosmic plan, imputed to me by some divine director, and I will not live eternally past this life, then the real things that matter are the things that matter to me and the impact I can have on those around me in the here and now. And just with a little commercial, like I'm trying to present on a book in 20 minutes, but there's also Luke Jansen, who is a CSCA member and has been to this conference, and he has his own podcast of his deconstruction, which is called Recovering Evangelicals. And he's had a long process of reconstructing his faith in a more sophisticated and theologically deep way. But what struck us about the majority of these interviews is that some of the anger and depression and the profound loneliness experienced by most of the interviewees, especially the ones who have lost their church home, those kind of feelings. Deconstruction is, in a word, loss. Quote, "What surprises me most is the grief," said a young woman I'll call Chloe. Quote, "I grieve the girl who genuinely trusted God so wholeheartedly. She was ready to go and live anywhere in the world to serve God and just desperately wanted to know what path she was called to. I miss the assurance and the confidence. I was shocked at how incredibly raw and lonely I felt." Sociologist Peter Berger wrote in the 1960s about religion as a sacred canopy to shield people from the harsh conditions of life and the threat of termination and death. At the turn of the millennium, Christian Smith, once again, wrote about sacred umbrellas, which may be, as Nancy Ammerman wrote about in a renovation of Berger's image, as a patchwork quilt full of holes now. I believe uniformity has significant liabilities, and that God scatters into diverse small groups those who would build towers of sameness for themselves. Diversity can be a creational good, but it is not sacred. It too is affected by the fall and is inadequate on its own to lead to human flourishing. It can have a fragmenting, anomic, atomizing effect. The rigid, sacred canopy of modernity with no openings to the outside is suffocating, but the torn umbrella of custom-made faith in postmodernity can be lonely and debilitating. It is not out of the frying pan and into the fire, so to say, but it is out of the tight faith community and into a spiritual homelessness for many, many people, at least for a time. Like the theme of this conference, one body and many parts, the nature of the Trinity as one God and three persons, offers some model to frame discussions of unity and diversity. Theologian Jessica Joustra at Redeemer University writes that J.H. Bavinck, another Dutch theologian, points to the unity and diversity in the Trinity as part of the image of God in us, and not just as individuals, but as humanity itself. God's unity and diversity is the basis for creation's unity and diversity, Joustra reports. So if we see only diversity, we promote separation, hierarchy, and even apartheid. If we emphasize only unity, the diverse gifts are lost in a bland homogeneity or even a manipulative uniformity. So here's my quick take. To be a human creature is to be a historically conditioned and to be in need of some shared temporal existential shelter, some humble tent or campground. It can never be fully diverse and requires some unifying values and mores and vision. It will always be a cultural ghetto of some sort. George Beagle says it best in his book, Letters to a Young Catholic. It's appropriate, I guess I quote a Catholic here. He says, "The most ghettoized people of all are those who don't know they grew up in a particular time and place and culture, and who think they can get into universal truths outside of particular realities and communities. The real question is not whether you grew up in a ghetto, but whether the ideas and customs and rhythms of your particular ghetto prepare you to engage the ideas and customs and life experiences of others without losing touch with your own roots." Those Catholics, they're great. I love that quote. My own ghetto is a Dutch-Canadian Reformed tradition that passionately promotes a form of post-secular principled pluralism as the best alternative to the secular hegemony we see in Canada and its ironically contradictory sacred project of diversity and inclusion. Sometimes the more honestly particular we are about our humanity, the more generously universal we become. I'll say that again. Sometimes the more honestly particular we are about our humanity, the more generously universal we can become. It is not that the undone are free without a spiritual home, but that they need a mediating structure, a spiritual home that gives them meaning, purpose, and a place to serve the greater good while engaging others graciously. James Davison's book, Forbearance, which offers some theological pondering for a disagreeable, polarized church, pushes for an unspiritualized community ethic. Quote, he says, "A positive commitment to living with the productive discomfort of difference as a reflection of the grace of God." And I think I missed some slides there, but anyways, that's the end of my presentation. Questions or comments?
I wish it were the end of their presentation.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's going to deal with that.
It's painful because it's so true, and it strikes so close to home. And we were discussing earlier, I was voted off the island years ago. So I think, for me personally, one of the things that I found that helped through the whole process was I was able to connect earlier on with people with a broader Christian faith than my own. So I grew up as a staunch Roman Catholic, and when I say staunch, I mean you had to be very sick to miss school, you had to be dead to miss church, and even then they bring the priest in for last rites. So very much, and then in college, I came to a saving faith in Jesus Christ in the evangelical church that you described with every one of those things going on. And it was a simplistic thing. It was profound in what I felt, but simplistic in the thing that for the first time in my life, I had something that was sure. And it was easy to project on everything else that, well, that I must be sure about that too. And I think that's where the weakness is. So I had been saved about 4 years before I even met. I didn't know that there were like Presbyterians who like love Jesus, you know. All I knew my whole life was being in a church with people who had a formalism but didn't know the Lord. So for anybody going through this, I would just encourage you, and please forgive me for butting in on this, but it's just something I feel so strongly that find alternate places for community like this. I found several others where I had a faith broader than my own with different perspectives that I could be reminded that my Jesus is still true. He's still more than enough. And people come and go. We all have our foibles, and Lord knows I got more than enough of my own. But having that blessing. So thank you for your encouragement, just in bringing this in. You're very open about
Peter, I don't hear a question there, but if you want to say something.
I'll just say one sentence. I find certainty and uniformity go together, and uncertainty and this dissipation of identity go together, and there's got to be a sweet spot for us to grow and flourish.
I think I can project my voice on this thing. You talked about the church as being a major part of both construction, uniformity, and also deconstruction. What about the educational institutions in Canada as they either affected the construction or the uniformity or the deconstruction? Did they play a role in these lives, in holding them to this uniform environment, or did they also, were they the catalyst for deconstruction?
And did you say Christian, higher education, or either?
Education in general within Canada, and as whether it's Christian or not.
We didn't study that, but anecdotally, from what I work nationally in higher education, so public universities tend to be deconstructive, and the sacred project is alive and well in Canadian public universities. Christian universities, sometimes by nature of their context, go in the other direction. Not all of them, and talk about particular universities have different flavors, but they sometimes go the opposite direction, out of fear, a sense of a threat. And so what I'm trying to do is navigate this space in between.
One more, this will be the final.
Could you say anything about how science, how the philosophy of science, the kind of science that is done, has any relationship directly to this? Were we taught to be certain in our science, and that causes us to be certain in our Christian communities, or was it the other way around at all?
Yeah, that's a leading question. I think you answered it to some question. You answered, what I'm saying is you answered it, I think, because there is a connection. And we have a whole chapter on science and faith, mostly about young earth creationism and faith, because it played a huge role. And it's this reactionary modernist certainty of faith against this modern certainty of science. And there's a combustion that happens. And usually it's faith that breaks, at least in the people we interviewed, right? And Luke Janssen came out on the other side, having repaired his theological structure so that science and faith are no longer in conflict, but others see an inherent conflict and end up going with a science that's supposed to be a method that becomes a metaphysics and a naturalistic metaphysics.
Thanks again.
Yeah.
On your way out, I'll add that an American scientist famous, Stephen Jay Gould, who is thought to have known a lot about creationism, knew that creationism was an American phenomenon. It couldn't be creationism in Canada.